I'm so glad you said that, because as you were talking about that, I thought, you know what? This is a great beer to have in the morning.
Yeah.
This is
waffle, Belgian waffles with syrup and salty, meaty bacon on the side.
Pints and Pairings is brought to you in part by We're Driving and The Beer Cave. Learn more about our sponsors at hopheadshead.com/pintsandpairings.
Welcome back to Pints and Pairings. I am Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop It Said.
And I'm Jason Hendrick with Everybody's Hungry.
I'm sitting in the shade.
You are, sir. You can see.
I can see clearly. There we go. Now the sun is gone.
Happiness. The sun moves so fast.
It was getting so hot over here. I couldn't focus on what I was doing. We are here with Kevin Rhodes from Groundswell Brewing Company.
And we want to say that you just missed out on a beautiful vignette and a philosophy on brewing in a small community with great support. You're going to have to just stay tuned to Pints and Pairings and watch for that phrase, that key, really kind of, it's almost like a fortune cookie. Like it was spot on.
Do I have to put in bed after that?
Right. I can't imagine that it wouldn't work for that for that philosophy. But I think everything works better in bed.
I don't know about you, but I think everything does work better in bed.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that.
I do want to, without creating a spoiler though for the vignette you're going to release, we didn't talk in the opening with Kevin about the naming and the theme or the philosophy of Groundswell and how they came about. So give us just a quick Cliff's Notes of Groundswell as a naming convention.
Well, Groundswell came up because first we started out as community, and we decided that we wanted just to be involved in the local community throughout San Diego, and we wanted to be supportive of the people who were going to support us. So we started down that road. Unfortunately, the name being trademarked, I have a friend who had mentioned Groundswell to me. And even though Groundswell has three good meanings and they all apply to us in certain ways, the one that we really like is the grassroots movement, or a groundswell of support. And so that's really what we're about, is getting out and getting people to think more about pints and pairings, to get people to think more about what they're drinking, how they're drinking. And we also know that even though craft beer is growing fairly well, a lot of it being big and hoppy, they're appealing to most of the people that are already there. And there's still a lot of people out there, about 80% of people who are drinking the big stuff, that we want them to come to us. So
I think that's a great point. We're making weird. Craft
he's
brewers.
Bought in already.
Hey, yeah, craft community. You're on board. You're
craft
part of the
brewers,
team now.
I never really thought about that. That we again are brewing beers that cater to our customer base. And boom. I never really thought about it that way. And yes, and then we start looking at some of these beers that are approachable for a number of different flavor reasons and philosophy reasons, bringing more people into it to try it. And especially, people are always willing to spend $90 on a dinner that's an experimental dinner, and so with beers of this caliber and with the philosophy of beer pairings or food pairings, it's a success. It's an equation for success. It's going to be pulling more people into it.
You touched on something that I think is really important too, though, when you say the quality and the caliber of these beers, Curtis, because we know some transitional breweries that are getting people off of the big three and moving them into a craft market, but they're for lack of a better phrase, they're transitional, right? They're good beers, but there's something that could be better about them. The beers that we're drinking tonight, and then I've had the pleasure and fortunate opportunity to drink in the brewery at Groundswell, I think are a little step above. They're transitional,
certainly,
but there's a crispness, there's a care taken, and there's a flavor profile with each of the beers that are available, speaking to a base recipe, a core style. Mm-hmm. There's no muddled aspect, and that I think for me is a challenge with a lot of transitional beers and breweries, is that there feels like a muddledness, right? It's a little bit better than the big three, but it's not quite as good as something you think could be out there.
Right.
Well, let's move to the brown, and I'll bring my point to that, in that you think of Fat Tire. Okay, so you've got this really malty craft beer, you know, and it was their cash cow forever, you know. And I just saw some reports saying that Ranger and one of their other IPAs has overtaken their Fat Tire. So whereas I was never really a fan of that, I thought it's kind of leading to what you were saying. It's this nice craft beer. I always wanted something just a little bit more. Coming back to this, and I know Fat Tire was this Belgian Abbey amber hybrid thing. Coming back to this brown, which I think is a gateway beer for a lot of people, because of the malt flavors and the sweetness. This one is so deep in the flavor profiles that keep kind of coming and then receding, then showing back up as you swallow.
Oh, most definitely.
And so we, coming back to your point, where this is not just that mark. It's another mark above that, where it's a full blown craft beer with all of the flavor to back it up, yeah. But it's incredibly approachable.
And when we talk about the food,
all I can say to that is thank you.
Well, you're
welcome. And it's definitely a testament, because Kevin, when we think about your philosophy of tying it with food as well, right away in the aroma, I'm getting kind of a savory, salty, dare I say, bacony kind of aroma, right? There's a mapley, bacony kind of thing. But then when I taste it, there's a little hazelnut, there's some molasses. So Curtis, you're spot on with the complexity and the depth. It's not just a flat, kind of softened brown ale. There's definitely things going on here that are changing as the beer is warming and as it's losing a little carbonation. It was crisp and cold. It had a little bit of a cola aspect initially, and now as it's warming, it's starting to morph into some other cool flavor notes. Yes.
Can I get you to pronounce the name? I'm going to...
Pilon Seal. It's a sugar that you find in Mexico. It's like a cone. Often you see kids licking it as candy, but really it's there because we wanted a little bit more of that molasses and brown sugar so that we had a little more balance. This beer, we thought from the very beginning, we brewed a brown, we liked it, we said it's missing a little bit of something. One of the guys at the brewery who has a Hispanic ethnicity, or he's of Mexican descent, he said we should really try Piloncillo sugar, and we said let's do it. And when we did it, we said, okay, well, now that's what we're looking for. We're looking for something that can go with like a seared scallop, where we almost named it Maillard Reaction, which Maillard Reaction is where the sugars caramelize from a protein.
It's that browning you get with meats and scallops and fish, right?
Absolutely.
Toast. I mean, that's the same. It's just the browning reaction.
It's a caramelization. Yeah. And that's what we wanted. And then braising, things like that. That's where beer has a much better stance to pair with food than wine does, is that we can pull out different cooking methods by the maltiness and the roasting of the malts that we have.
Now, Curtis, I want to jump into a little bit of food, because as we're talking and as I'm letting the beer sit on my palate, I'm going down a direction. And what I think it could use, again, it's a beautiful beer by itself, but when we're considering food, I think it could use a little sharpness. It could use a little punch, like maybe some grilled watermelon or grilled stone fruit. So you add that little bit of fruit sugar and a little sharp contrast to that really kind of softened sweetness we're getting out of the beer.
I could definitely see that, where you're caramelizing some sugars.
I was actually, I was thinking of a stacked sort of grilled cheese that had some caramelized onions on it, but then going towards the caramelizing bit, but then for the punch was using a sharper cheese in there. So kind of a blue, I've done this a few times where you've mixed blue cheese in with cream cheese, I think it was, and then you spread, and then so it was just a really light blue cheese. So it wasn't a punch you in the face, but it was still there that would give you that sharpness to kind of cut for this to kind of contrast
right
against it.
Now, as we're talking about these beers, Kevin, going back to your team at Groundswell, how often are you doing some actual dinner or some meal pairings with your beers to evaluate their validity to your philosophy and to really confirm that they're standing up in the way you expect them to?
Well, unfortunately, we don't do enough of that, like actual food beer sitting in the brewery trying that. Where we get a lot of feedback is we get a lot of chefs in the brewery. And the chefs that come in, we'll talk to them about food. We'll talk to them about this. Then we go do a lot of food events. We do the next one that's coming up is Taste of the Mission at the San Diego Mission. We did an event a while back, which was one of my favorite events, and I hope we get invited every year. But Mama's Kitchen feeds the homeless, and they feed people who have HIV. And they had 55 restaurants, and we were the only brewery.
Wow.
And
that leaves the door wide open for you.
It does, because we were right in our wheelhouse with chefs. And so we were feeding chefs beer. And what we did is we went around, and so we talked to people, and we kind of found different food. Like right next to us was West Coast Tavern, and they were doing shrimp and grits with chorizo. And so we were apparently telling people who got the brown, because we had our brown out that night. We knew it was a food night. Let's do that. And so we said, if you're going to have the brown, go talk to these guys. And it was really nice because the heat was being balanced out by that malt. Yeah. It was really kind of cool. It's a contradictory pairing. And then our IPA that we had, our IPA has some really nice tropical fruits, and it has a little bit of bitterness. And Roy's from La Jolla was doing, Roy's from La Jolla was doing seared hamachi with yuzu.
What is hamachi?
Yellowtail tuna.
Oh, yeah. All right.
It's a yellowtail tuna. I think it's a cheek.
Okay.
And so they were doing this grilled, this seared hamachi with pepper, corns, and then yuzu. And so the malt, it was really kind of an interesting one because on the nose they were very similar, the tropical fruits, the yuzu, and then the maltiness on the palate more helped out the peppercorns that kind of balanced out. That was really kind of cool. So we just kind of sent people that way. So when we go places, that's what we do, is we try to figure out, okay, what's going on with that food, which one of our beers will go with that.
And occasionally I've thrown this out, Curtis, because I'm biased, it's one of my favorite holidays, but I also could see this being a really nice Thanksgiving beer.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you look across the spectrum, a great contrast is going to be your cranberries or a fruit compote kind of direction. But you're also tying in with the great dark meat of the turkey. You know, you're getting that resonating sweetness. If you're doing any kind of sweet potato dish, you could go...
just think of a sweet potato pie and with this beer.
Or a savory contrast with some kind of stuffing with great sage and herbs.
Oh, yeah.
So you're getting an herbaceous note to cut back into the sweetness. This is one of those beers, and we've had a couple throughout our lifetime as Pints and Pairings, that just seem to be a centralized opportunity for multiple dishes in a single theme like Thanksgiving.
We agree. It works with a lot of food. And you're really making me look forward to Thanksgiving this year, even more than usual.
So, we're coming up on about 15 minutes for this. Maybe we let's call it a good.
And we'll jump right back in with the IPA.
Right. So if this is the first episode that you've listened to, you want to make sure you go to groundswellbrewingcompany.com. And you'll find all the Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, all the links that you need to know about to get connected, whatever your social philosophy.
And I recommend if you're in San Diego or traveling through San Diego, stop in the brewery. I've been in there. It's small and intimate. The staff is very courteous, and they like to talk about what's going on in the brew house. And you can actually watch over the counter as the guys are putting together their mash and working through their next batch. It's a cool place to be.
Let me make a correction. It's groundswellbrew.com, not groundswellbrewing.com.
Okay. I'm going to throw in a shameless plug that we do have the most comfortable tap room in all of San Diego.
Nice.
18-inch bar stools. You can sit on them for however long your session is. Couches built into both corners where you can bring a party of maybe 8 or 10 and just enjoy what beer is all about, being with friends and hanging out.
That's the best philosophy. That's the best part about beer
And a great exit / lead in to our next segment.
There it is. So as we cut out, I'll just remind everyone listening to eat, drink, and be happy.
See you at the next pour.
Cheers.
Pints and Pairings is brought to you in part by The Beer Cave, located at 231 Village Commons Boulevard in Camarillo, California.
If you prefer a cocktail or some vino, this neighborhood market also has a great selection of premium spirits and wine, along with an attached deli for a quick sandwich to go.
When you stop in, be sure to mention that you heard about them right here on the Pints and Pairings Show, and maybe grab a sandwich for me on your way out.